Hello and welcome to The Modern Enthusiast. I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
And I'm James.
And this week we have a group of different topics to talk about, including what makes modern into modern. Things we like, things we think could improve. Last week we talked about Jeskai Ascendancy Combo, a long list of things that you could use to beat it with, if you're planning on beating it. We also had a long list of cards in our recurring Is It Good series. We certainly heard back from you about some more cards, so we're making a small list today that we'll be talking about later in the show as well. If you would like to find us, we are on Twitter. The name is Modern Podcast, and you can also find our email address in the show notes here. We do have an RSS feed now. You can find it linked at the bottom of our notes on MTGcast. I don't know how RSS feeds work, but I put it in, and somebody who actually knows how they work said that it worked fine, and it downloaded all the episodes. So I think you're in business if you want to get an easy access to our subscription and all of our past episodes. That's how you can do it. This week, so we're going to start off talking about what an ideal game of Modern looks like. And I've been thinking about this. I think we can agree on some of the extremes. I don't think anybody wants a game of Modern to look like a one-turn combo kill. Like, turn one, look at your initial seven cards, you're dead. I also think people, by and large, Adam accepted who plays grindy control decks, I think by and large people don't want to play a 25-turn game where you're just throwing guys against each other, you have ground stalls, and then somebody breaks out like some sort of Greek phalanx grinding against another one hoping that somebody trips. But I think we can hedge in what makes Modern interesting and in what absences Modern has and that makes it more enjoyable. First off, I wanted to talk about how the absence of cards like Force of Will and Daze and Wasteland in the format make Modern less harsh for decks that play big mana spells. I think that it adds a lot more importance to a later game versus it does in Legacy. Adam, I know that you're a diehard Legacy player. I haven't played the format for a while. I wanted to know your opinions on that.
I think Modern is a format where you can cast more big spells and expect them to resolve a little bit more, but you still have a lot of decks in Modern that are playing Mana Leak and Remand, and those are also cards that are pretty hostile to trying to resolve six drops. But we have a buddy who's been playing a three or four color Fauna Shaman deck where basically he's just trying to cast enormous things constantly. It's got Lotus Cobra in it, and he has been pretty successful at the local level playing that deck a few times, so I think it shows that you can play that game. Mm-hmm. As long as you have plans for dealing with some of the other decks, you can play that game of just jamming, you know, big haymakers and getting there. It's a little bit different in Legacy just because of the existence of cards like Wasteland, Daze, and also especially Rishadan Port, mm-hmm, and Stifle and Legacy. You have decks that are just completely designed to deny you mana, so trying to resolve big expensive spells is a whole different beast in that format. But Modern is definitely a place where you can do that if you really want to. Mm-hmm. So
I don't miss Force of Will. I think Force of Will is the glue that holds Legacy together. The format would not work without that card.
Yep.
But I don't miss Force of Will in Modern. I certainly think that Force of Will would make certain strategies, most notably Splinter Twin and some of the Delver-style decks, significantly more powerful than they need to be. Especially with the new added, you know, play toys of Dig Through Time or Treasure Cruise to provide you, you know, card advantage to feed your Force of Wills. I think that Force of Will is a card that it's not necessary in Modern right now. We don't have any combo decks that are so out of hand. There's no one playing turn two show and tells for Emrakul and turn one show and tells for Emrakul. We don't have the same trappings that Vintage or, you know, Modern or Vintage Legacy hands to prevent you or you need Force of Will. So I don't miss Force of Will. I don't know about Wasteland. The Modern mana base is too good. The Fetch Shock mana base is too good, and I have seen decks that have stretched their mana bases to the limit and play zero basics on a number of Modern decks, and there's not a ton of cards that really punish people in Modern. I think we're pretty much on people play Blood Moon. Occasionally you'll see Molten Rain, and there are some main deck tech edges, but that doesn't really come online until turn three or four. I don't know if I want it to be Wasteland per se, because Wasteland itself is a very good Magic card. But I do think Modern's mana bases are probably a little better than I would prefer they would be. I mean, I know I've played 5-color Zoo in Modern on a number of occasions, and that mana base is just completely ridiculous.
You know, I guess that leads back to the question of what does an ideal Modern game look like, and I think being able to cast your spells is nice. I certainly do like having a broad mana base that allows you to run the spells that you want to play without... I mean, I think like an ideal Modern game does not involve being mana screwed, either having the wrong colors, nor having insufficient mana due to cards like Wasteland. I feel like an ideal Modern game has interaction where both players are making meaningful choices, and I know that we talked about this before, that the issue of Jeskai Ascendancy and the Storm deck is that you sit there watching somebody do things by themselves for 5 or 10 minutes, and then you say, like, did you get there? And that is not an ideal Modern game for me.
I think one of the problems I have with sort of the way those decks exist is that I think one of the big ways you hate them are, specifically with those two decks, you have a lot of permanents like Rule of Law or Heather Sworn Canonist, stuff like that, that slows them down, and are also, like, Heather Sworn Canonist can also attack, for example. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I don't like about that is that, so you have your hate spell, and then basically they're just waiting to find their answer to it. So I think that the Ascendancy deck plays a bunch of wear tears in its sideboard, because it deals with pretty much all the hate that they need to deal with. So if they find it, then they kind of just kill you again.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't find it, then you just kill them. And I feel like, I agree, I feel like the storm mechanic and the Ascendancy deck, they don't provide meaningful decisions for either player in Modern. It's like how many of my hate spells did I draw versus how many of your answers to my hate spells did you draw. And I'm not sure that that provides a lot of meaningful decision-making during the game.
I want to go back to kind of the mana base thing for a second, but my problem with those combo decks is, and I've got plenty of friends who actually enjoy those combo decks, I don't think that there should ever be a game of Magic where a player in real life clicks F6 and goes and gets a drink. And I have played both against Eggs when it was Modern legal, and against the Ascension deck, or the Ascendancy deck, and it's just like your opponent goes off, you're not really interacting with them, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna go, and I'm gonna get a soda, and I'm gonna come back, and we're gonna start game two. And you can't really do that in the real world, but you do it on Moto all the time. It's like, you don't need those in a format. It slows the tournament down for everybody. And even skilled Ascendancy players, and I know they are out there, who are practicing and making sure that they can go through their combo as quickly as possible. It's still like a 3 or 4 step process of a little chore. You need to change a little dice, and it just adds time to a tournament. And it makes it so that one person is just not having any fun.
And you said the word fun. I think that Modern hits on a lot of fun levels for me. A good Modern game lasts 8 to 9 turns. Both players have a chance where they feel like they're in control. You know, you're the aggressor, maybe you remand something and you snap cast it and you feel like you know you want to be on that end of that interaction. And maybe the other person, Restoration Angels, their kitchen finks, and you say, like, you know, they have the power there. There's a shifting balance that eventually gets worked out. And I do like that about Modern, that I think a good game should last more than 4 or 5 turns. And I think that the format has many tools in it that prolong it in ways that, for example, Thoughtseize and Inquisition of Kozilek will contain a combo deck for a few turns. But they don't win the game on their own. And Eidolon of Rhetoric will stop a combo deck until they can find their Flame Slasher Echoing Truth. But they don't win the game right there. But they do meaningfully prolong a game into a point where both players have had an opportunity to cast spells that they feel they enjoy casting and make an attempt at winning.
Going back to the mana base issue where Doug was saying that you want to be able to cast your spells, and I was saying I think the mana base in mind might be a little too good. We have a friend named Jack Granite who prefers to play decks, especially in formats where you can do some weird things. The best Jack story is a turn 2 blood guess into a turn 3 absorb, which is black black on 2 and blue blue white on 3. And so my comment about mana bases in Modern, it's not that I don't want people to be able to cast their spells. I think having solid mana base and being able to cast your spells is a good health for a format. I think that you just shouldn't be allowed to play any card you want without there being a cost. And I think that one of my concerns with the current way Modern's format is that there isn't really a cost to playing four or five colors. There are fixing in, like, there's infinite fixing in Modern. You have every sort of fixing land you could want, except for the original dual lands. And there really isn't a cost to playing a whole lot of colors in decks. And I've seen five color Zoo, four color Jund. The format has had a number of these multiple color. I mean, the Ascendancy deck is four solid colors. It's red, blue, white, green. And, like, this kind of fixing, I think that there should be a little bit of constraint on that, because it makes you choose what spells you prioritize what you want in the deck. I think that there's a problem whenever you have a format where your deck can cast, wants to cast Cruel Ultimatum on 7 and Wild Akatal on 1. You know, just like, you have to have some limits. And we had talked about this as a joke one day, the Dungrove Elder deck, where you played 5 colors with Dungrove Elder and every hand in your deck is a forest, but it's also a dual land. So your Dungrove Elder gets huge, but you're also casting other hilarious cards. But I think the key to Magic is fun. And I think one of the things that everyone will tell you is the least fun thing in a game of Magic is when you keep a one lander or a two lander and you just never draw another land over like 8 turns and you don't play. And I think the problem is that the Ascendancy decks do a really good job of making your opponent feel like they don't have any lands. Because once the Ascendancy deck goes off, it's the same feeling. You're just not playing Magic. You're just sitting there watching your opponent draw cards and tap and untap permanents for, I think when I played it out last week, I had timed one of my combos with 7 minutes. And my opponent doing nothing, it still took me 7 minutes to go through all the motions and count up enough spells. And I think there's probably ones that were longer than that. I just there was one that was actually timing. And it's just like,
if we're comparing it to a Legacy deck, the Legacy deck is High Tide, and it's really miserable for everybody in the room, I think.
I think
when
so.
When you're at the end of a round to, you know, be 15 or 20 minutes over time in the round, and we're still just sitting there, you know, talking in a tournament. It's like, oh, yeah, there's some High Tide guy that's in turns, and he's, you know, taking half an hour to actually go off. And it's the same kind of thing, like, when you're in Modern also, but when you're sitting across from a person playing a deck like that that's a non-interactive combo that takes 10 or 15 minutes to actually physically execute your combo, it's miserable for everybody in the room. And, yeah, even though, I think, because James and I have talked about this, I don't think that the Ascendancy deck is actually all that dominant of a deck in Modern. I think it's very fightable, and it's not the juggernaut that Eggs was. I think that that deck should not be allowed to exist for time constraint reasons.
That's why we don't have Sensei's Divining Top in Modern, right, among other things.
That was why a card like Lantex was banned for a long time in Legacy, because mostly for time constraint reasons. You know, it's that is a real issue in tournaments. And so even if we're not going to talk about, you know, how good a deck is or how not good a deck is, we live in the real world and tournaments have time constraints. And I think that's a pretty good reason for that deck not to exist, beyond the fact that it's just miserable for everybody else in the room.
Yeah, you know, when I was playing High Tide in Legacy, I ended up cutting the Brain Freeze off the sideboard with the goal that I'm not even going to track Storm. All I'm just going to do is deck you with Blue Sun Zenith. I don't even want to keep track of that metric. I just want to count to 60 mana and kill you.
Well, and even one of the things with High Tide is that, like, very skilled High Tide pilots, and I think it's Feline Longmore who plays on the Starshade Circuit, when you get good at doing the High Tide, doing your math, shuffling, that deck plays a bunch of draw sevens and draw fours. It can combo, I don't want to say very quickly because it still involves a fair amount of shuffling and going over and over again, but that deck can draw a lot of cards and it can get to where it's going very quickly if your opponent's not drawing forcibles and interrupting you. And if your opponent is drawing forcibles and trying to interrupt you, you still have a game going and they're still back and forth. Right. There's still hope. When the Ascendancy deck goes off, it does so one card at a time. And your opponent doesn't see new cards, so there isn't a place for them to...
Right. They've either already had their interaction and have lost the fight, or they didn't have any, and they've just been sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, so that's one of the biggest issues with that deck, is that that deck, it goes one card at a time, there's no interesting things that change the board, so your opponent's just waiting, and it's just going to go off or it's not, and it can brick because it only goes off seeing, I mean, I say one card, it loots one card and it draws one card if you're not treasure cruising. So every cantrip sees two cards, but it's actually not that hard with that deck, especially if you're trying to go off and you only have one cantrip to start, where you will actually miss. But, like, once High Tide gets going, it's, you know, Meditate draws four, Time Spiral draws seven. That deck actually sees a lot, Brainstorm sees three, so does Preordain. So that deck sees a lot of cards, which is not the same, unfortunately, for the Ascendancy deck. I would like there to be more non-creature-based combo decks in Modern. I think that combo decks are kind of an interesting thing to play against when you're not playing a combo deck. Mm-hmm. I find that there's generally a lot of interesting matchups with combo decks where you're like, I'm trying to do X, and they're trying to do Y, and so, like, you get that interesting subgame, I'm trying to stop the combo through this path, they're trying to get the combo going through this path, I'm still trying to kill them, there's a lot of levels there. Sometimes you have that, you know, that interesting game where your Storm opponent in Legacy Thought seizes you, and they have to pick between the card that stops your Storm and the card that just kills them, based on what their hand is. There's a lot of options in play there. So I would like to see more combo decks that people can play without playing creatures if that's an option they want to play. I just don't think the Ascendancy deck is the right deck for this format. I think that it's just not fun for people to play against.
So let's talk about some things that... what was that, Adam?
As you say, for me, to answer your question about what a good game of Modern looks like for me, it's decks that both players make meaningful decisions so that it's not one person sitting there doing everything, or mm-hmm. one person doesn't get to play the game because of the deck, not because maybe they missed some mana or they drew too many mana. Mm-hmm. Not the things that are within the game, but, you know, my deck choice doesn't completely nullify your deck choice. So, you know, like yeah. you're playing blue-white-red against junk, and both players are playing this fair game where they are grinding back and forth, and I'm making meaningful decisions about what creatures I want to kill of yours, you're making meaningful decisions about what cards you want to make me discard with your Thoughtseize. And that's not to say that I don't think combo decks shouldn't exist. I would never play one, but they're fine. But you have combo decks that I think are fair and healthy, like Twin and Scape Shift, and then the combos that you get out of the Birthing Pod decks. And then you get combos, I think, like Ascendancy that are unhealthy where they're not interactive, whereas Twin is a very interactive deck. Mm-hmm. Pod is a reasonably interactive deck. And then Scape Shift, less so, but all those decks are very fightable, and none of them are going to combo you before turn four.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing. I think that's actually one of Wizard's stated goals for Modern, is that they don't want combo decks that exist before turn four, or they rather consistently combo before turn four, mm-hmm. and I think the Ascendancy deck is one of those decks that is very consistent turn two, three, killing you. So I like it when both players, and James and I were talking about, we were all talking about this before the cast, where both players make meaningful decisions in the game, and that the things that they, you know, the decisions they make, their play lines, actually matter for the outcome of the game.
You know, one of the things you brought up was, you know, you want to be able to play your cards and you don't want to be able to be comboed off, but the other end of combo with prison decks. And we do not have prison decks in Modern, which is nice. I mean, in Vintage, you can play against somebody and you have a great hand, you're on the draw, and they go, turn one, Mishra's Workshop, Trinisphere. Turn two, Crucible of Worlds, Strip Mine. Good game, scoop it up. Like, you will never, ever beat that. And we don't have that kind of thing in Modern, and it's nice because often in Vintage, you play against that kind of deck, and you think, well, I think I can fight through this. I think I can get out of this. I can bust out of this prison deck. And you never can. You know, you think like, oh, well, like, they played a turn one Lodestone Golem, so I can play a land and then tap that land to play a Mox, and I have Lightning Bolt next turn, but up, they played a Wasteland and took up my land. Now I'm taking five more from Lodestone Golem. There's not that kind of slow poison combo that Prison infects Vintage with. We don't have that problem. We also, we don't really have a tempo deck in Modern, which is to say, and I'm defining that in Legacy terms, of a deck that goes turn one, daze your threat, or like Delver, turn one, daze your threat, turn two, Spell Pierce, turn three, Mental Misstep, Mana Leak, turn four, Snapcaster Mage, my Spell Pierce. Like, good game. You've attempted to cast your spells, none of them went through, and I'm going to kill you with an insect. For whatever reason, I mean, we don't have the cards for a prison deck in Modern, but we also have the cards for a tempo strategy, but it is just not good in Modern.
I think the blue-red Delver deck, which doesn't exactly fit our previous definition of, like, a true legacy tempo deck, it's pretty close to that in Modern, because it's got Spell Pierce Mana Leak, Reman, Snapcaster Mage, mm-hmm. and now it's got Treasure Cruise or Dig Through Time or whatever you want to play to refill, so after one for one of you, it gets to the last hand. I think that's pretty close.
The absence of Wasteland is critical, though.
Not having Wasteland in Days is certainly big, but it's also the difference in the formats between Modern and Legacy is that Modern is typically a little bit slower, so the fact that you don't have the free counter spells, no one has access to the free counter spells, basically. I think that deck is very good. I know that I think some of our listeners have wrote into us saying that that deck is very oppressive in their local metagame. We haven't encountered that yet. I'm not sure it's because people haven't played it as much around here, or people are playing decks that are good against that kind of game.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just glib to say play Volcanic Fallout, but that deck has very fragile threats.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, the reason why I don't think the deck is so oppressive around here is that our local metagame is full of people who like removal spells, and even when you draw... Adam and I were testing this last week. Even when I would outdraw him by 20 cards... if he just drew as many removal spells as I drew threats, the other 20 cards were a weird combination of cantrips, bolts, and counter spells that become ineffective after about turn 6.
Mm-hmm.
I've played both the Jeff Hoogland Blue-Red Fairies tempo deck and the Louis Scott Vargas Blue-Red Delver deck. They're both good, but without Days, Wasteland, Force of Will, it's very hard to protect your threats.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't tempo quite as hard because there's not really ways to get free turns. I mean, you're tempoing somebody who's trying to leverage mana advantage into making it feel like you've had more turns than they have, and it's very hard to do that when you're like, play my one drop, mana leak, remand, hope you don't have anything sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still spending your turns to get there, so you had turn one, mm-hmm. but you don't feel that far ahead.
The number of Supreme Verdicts that get played in our metagame, too, I think is pretty indicative of that as well. There's a lot of people, including myself, that play blue-white X control decks at our local store, and that card seems pretty miserable for the Delver decks to mm-hmm. have to deal with.
Yeah, one thing we also don't have in Modern really at all is an Elf Ball deck. We don't have Elf Combo, which I think threatens around the edges, because there's cards like Cloudstone Curio and those sorts of things that really do threaten an elves. You know, you have Beck and Call, which was a Glimpse of Nature for one more mana. So I think at one point we will have an unfun and oppressive elf deck that we have to play against, and we need to be playing gut shots.
I think that deck kind of falls prey to the same kind of things that Elver deck falls prey to, mm-hmm. which is decks that play lots and lots of point removal spells, and you have
Anger the Gods is a thing.
Yeah.
And then you also have an issue also where you can't stop somebody else who can delay you. Like, the Splinter Twin plan is, I'm going to remand one of your spells and then I'll combo off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it never attempts to be the faster deck, it just attempts to be the deck that can put you off foot. So we have a reprise of the Is It Good segment right now, and we have a few cards to go through here. One that I wanted to bring up that I had actually been disappointed in is Kuranos. I don't know if I'm playing him in the right decks, but I have been boarding him in decks like Twin with the idea that he's the 5-drop that comes in against the junk decks and the things you would bring in Batterskull. And I have either killed with the Twin combo with him in my hand or died looking at Kuranos, where there never feels like a point when you can resolve that card and safely tap out for it, and have it immediately affect the board. Like, if you're holding Cryptic Command and your opponent is attacking you with Tarmogoyf, you can't exactly tap out for Kuranos unless you can sustain a couple Tarmogoyf attacks, because it would be better to hope that you can counter tap or tap bounce or tap draw or something there. And there was never a window. Whereas with Batterskull, you could run a Batterskull out into a Tarmogoyf and say, well, you know, at least I'm going to stop you for a very long time with this. I'm going to gain 4 life. I'm going to return it to my hand. I'm going to play it again.
Right when I read Karinos, when he got spoiled, I thought that I wanted to try him out in Modern because he seemed very good to me. Not because he could ever be, not because I ever wanted him to be a creature, but just because, his effect is very good. And he became very popular. He's in most blue-red X decks as a 1 or 2 of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's very good. He pressures your opponent, into doing something, and he pulls you pretty, far ahead on cards.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, people are ready for him now. He's a known commodity. So you're likely to play against decks that have, either, you know, some Oblivion Ring type effect or a Celestial Purge or something to deal with him. So sometimes he's, not the easiest to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, like, in a situation that you're talking about where your opponent is very far ahead on board, he's not gonna catch you up. But when you're not super far behind or you can afford to, you know, to play him, he's very, very, he's a big problem, basically. The lightning bolt that he does, you can point at a player to finish him off or point at creatures to get stuff out of the way. I think he's pretty good. I don't think he is insane anymore mm-hmm. because everyone knows about him. It's the same with Batterskull. When it wasn't ubiquitous for your twin decks or your blue-white-red control decks to be boarding 2 Batterskulls in to grind, they were really good because they were not real expected, or you weren't exactly sure what your opponent was going to be boarding in to grind. But now everybody knows about those cards, so I think their value goes down a little bit, but mm-hmm. I still think they're really good and they're worth playing.
But I didn't even find it was very good in, you know, in Kiki Pod. You'd never want a pod for that as your 5 drop because it didn't do enough. But suppose when you're playing a combo deck that wants to get a board presence on the board or combo off, mm-hmm. Slowly drawing cards and pinging things, the deck's not meant for that.
I don't really like it in a pod shell just because it's not doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
But in a deck like Twin, I think those cards are fairly decent because even if your plan is to bore out your combo, your opponent doesn't necessarily know that.
Yeah.
And they're spending resources and time trying to prevent you from comboing. And then you play a couple of grindy cards and all of a sudden they've taken some incidental damage and they're trying to stop comboing, but they're, you know, they find themselves at 6 life or 9 life and a couple of flips from Karinos and a lightning bolt and they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same with a deck like blue, white, red. Like there are some matchups where you just want to grind. It's not about, you're not worried about your opponent comboing you or anything like that and your junk, your black, green or the control mirrors. And I think the value of those cards goes way up because they're fairly difficult to deal with, and they require your opponent to put a bunch of resources into them
mm-hmm.
to deal with them. So,
I have never understood Karinos in Modern. He makes sense in the blue-white-red control deck because that deck wants to go on for 88 turns. But I've never understood him, and he makes sense against that deck too if you want to board against those decks, so they can't really remove him. But he's never made sense to me against things like Junk, because yes, Junk has trouble getting a Karinos off the board, but Karinos hits for 3 damage every time you have a non-land on top of your deck, and Tarmogoyf hits for 4 damage every time you turn it sideways. And so I've never quite understood it, because it doesn't affect the board at all. Yes, it may be able to ping things off the turn after you play it, but it can't really block, and it's not really going to eat up removal spells or damage, so it really only works if you can race whatever deck you're playing against by flipping lightning bolts, and I don't think that a lot of decks are truly equipped to go long against decks like the black-green rock slash junk decks or blue-white-red control. Our friend Victor, and I only mentioned him because I know he's going to get a huge kick out of having his names on the podcast, really, really liked playing Karinos in his Kiki Pod deck, and I can never figure out why, because you go and you pot up Karanos with Blue and Red Control. And Blue and Red Control is a deck that is designed to see turn 30. I mean, that is a deck that is designed to go long. It wants to go long. If you're trying to go long with them, and playing Karanos is a 7-turn clock, is going long with them. 7-plus turn clock, actually, because you're not always going to flip a bolt. Is playing into their wheelhouse. You are now playing your deck, which is creature-based and combo-based, in such a way that you are playing into their game plan of going long. And I can tell you from experience, you may not be able to sit there for 7 turns against the Blade Control deck and not get burned out or have them cast Sphinx's Revelation for 9 and pretty much, like, seal the game that way. So, if you're playing one of those decks where Karanos is a threat that they can't get off the board, and he's fast enough that he's a real problem for those decks, I can see playing him, but as much as I like the card, it's been my experience that oftentimes even in a very early Karanos isn't enough to really hold a game or lock up a board or create a threat that really scares opposing modern decks, and the inability to block with him or have them attack him like a Planeswalker would makes him less interesting to me.
I agree with that sentiment. When he is good, he's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And when you need him to affect the board in a meaningful way, like the turn you play him, and he obviously doesn't, unless he comes down and is a creature, which is, he very, very rarely is in modern, he feels like he's not at all what you need. Because I play him in Blue White Red, and that's the only deck I've ever played him in,
mm-hmm.
He always feels pretty good to me in that deck. But yeah, I think he's very matchup and deck specific. He's not something that just because you have blue and red mana in your deck, you want to play him. And mm-hmm. I definitely don't like him in Pod very much. But in a deck like Blue and Red or a deck like Twin, I think he's pretty reasonable. He might even be okay in a deck like, Scapeshift, just because with your mana ramp, you can play him pretty early.
Resolved him in Blue Red Tron on turn 3 in a number of games, and was always like, well, he's here and he's something, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like that sealed the game. It was more like, well, this is something that we're doing while we're trying to find Mindslave or not. This is something my opponent must answer right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he won a fair number of games by keeping things off the board, and he lost a fair number of games by not being interesting enough on his own to like control the board.
Yeah, he's less than insane, which is what people I think thought he was when he was first getting played, which was he was this like unbeatable permanent that no one could ever deal with. He's short of that.
Yeah,
but he is much better than a do nothing normally, I think.
Better than a Honden of Seeing Winds.
I think if I were playing a Splinter Twin deck and I was looking for a big threat to board in against her to fight Jund decks and junk decks and rock decks, I think I'd be reaching for Frost Titan or Sphinx of Drawer Isle or Siege Gang Commander as being big cards that also have a huge effect on the board and are harder to deal with because they affect the board so much when they come down or, you know, just the way they interact with your opponent. I'm not sure that playing Karanos affects the board enough against the creature decks. I mean, he's sweet against other control decks. If you can resolve him against the control decks, he is an issue that they have to think about while you're trying to combo. But, I mean, Duggan played him last week in Splinter Twin, and just oftentimes if you're twinning, it's just not enough.
Yeah, so here's another question, too. A similarly related card is Vendilion Clip. I think that we featured it in previous editions of Is It Good? I just want to briefly return to it. I've been seeing it pop up. I think Vendilion Click is a good card right now if you're playing it in a deck with many other creatures. Because if you are playing other creatures, you have a chance that Vendilion Click will actually live because a previous creature has absorbed a kill spell.
Vendilion Click's one of my favorite creatures ever printed. And that means something because I don't really like casting creatures very much. I think it's a very good card overall. But its big drawback in Modern is that it's got one toughness, and there are lots of decks in the format that are jamming a lot of removal spells.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really good sideboard card, mm-hmm. And I've played it in my sideboard of Blue-White-Red and other Blue-White decks. because it's really good against some of the other combo decks that will side down removal against you. Sometimes it's a card to bring in against a heavy removal deck, because you know they will be siding out removal spells against you, especially if they didn't see targets for their abrupt decays, game one. So in that setting, I like it, because Liliana of the Veil can give you some trouble against, like, black-green decks, and Vendilion Click fights Liliana fairly well. I would not want to main deck too many of that card in most decks, just because it is very frail, and playing your Vendilion Click, looking at your opponent's hand, and then having them electrolyze Vendilion Click and you is bad, I think.
Yes.
Or getting it lightning bolted just doesn't seem great. But I think there are some very specific matchups where it's really good.
Well, here's one that you brought up, too, that has an intersection with it. Did you want to have a closing thought on it?
Somewhere on one of these, I'm going to have to listen to all of our podcasts again this weekend, because somewhere you will be able to find an earlier podcast where I will tell you exactly how much I don't like Vendilion Click in Modern. And, well, I think very little has changed on that opinion, so I won't rehash it. I will say it is an excellent threat against the Ascendancy deck, as they have no real way to get it off the board, and they are a one-card combo where tucking an Ascendancy can have a huge impact. So I won't rehash most of my distaste for that card in this format. I will say that card has improved, having a matchup where they can't stop a 3-1 flyer. So a 3-1 flyer is a hell of a clock. And
so you like it as a sideboard?
I like it more than I liked it before. I don't think I would personally play it right now, but like I would like to say that at least, you know, metagame shift, and that card is very good against the Ascendancy deck.
I think it falls in the same category as a card like Geist of St. Traft, where it's really good out of your sideboard because it puts decks that can't interact with it on a very fast clock.
Yes.
So
here's another one that does interact with it. Is it Staticaster? Adam, you had brought this one up. I think we're all considering it as a sideboard card.
I've liked that card for a while. I haven't played it a ton. Played it a little bit in Standard when that was around. But it has been in some modern sideboards of mine. I think it's very good in a lot of matchups. There are a surprising number of X1s that exist in the format. It shoots down most of the mana dorks in the Ascendancy combo, which has sort of been a recurring theme for us. Shoots down Lingering Souls, Dark Confidants, you know, all the mana dorks and Pod are good as well. Kills lots of Pester Mites. It is a card that has a lot of utility. It's also an O3, so it can block some meaningful things. I think it's a pretty strong sideboard card. If you've got room for it, it's not always on everybody's radar.
Now, I've got a similar one, and James, this is a more complex question. Dark Blast in decks that don't abuse the graveyard.
I think Dark Blast is awesome in Modern. I think Dark Blast is very underplayed. I know a couple of people who really liked Dark Blast but didn't play it because they found themselves being too greedy in their dredging of the Dark Blast, and they would find that that would keep their deck from going. But I think if you are playing any deck with Lingering Souls, so Junk specifically, or any deck with Snapcaster Mage, and you are playing black, Dark Blast is a hell of a way to control the Delver decks. I mean, if you want a way to keep the card advantage. And in fact, right now, like, let's be honest, even if you're not playing graveyard cards, dredging is a hell of a way to turn on your, what's the dredging card? Your Treasure Cruises and your Dig Through Times.
It enables Tarmogoyf.
It makes your Tarmogoyf
beat theirs.
Yeah,
you can shrink theirs.
It's an awesome and very underplayed card. I have beaten both Affinity and the blue-red Delver deck. Now, this is before they have Treasure Cruise, but I've beaten both of those decks by just having that card in your opener and just casting it over and over and over again, and you run yourself down on cards, but eventually they just run out of threats, and then you just let yourself draw cards. That card is very good and very underplayed. I think that card should see a lot more play. As for the Staticaster, I think the Staticaster is awesome, but I'm not sure. Whenever I reach for a pinger, I tend to reach for the ones that shoot people's faces as well. So I tend to be kind of a Spark Mage fan, but I think Izzet Staticaster is awesome. Izzet Staticaster wins the war with Spark Mage since it has bigger toughness. Izzet Staticaster is awesome because it kills multiple Birds of Paradises. So if you're playing against an Ascendancy deck and they go bird, bird, there's a way to try to play around removal, and you're just like, pick them both. I think that Dark Blessed and Staticaster, the value of both of those cards goes up with Ascendancy in the format, since 8 of their 12 mana dorks are X1s. I don't know if it's an X1 there, I should have said O1s, since they're all O1s, but, I mean, I think that both of those cards are awesome. If you live in a metagame with Delver, Affinity, and Ascendancy as decks, then those are two cards that you should be highly considering for every deck you play. If that's your local metagame, those cards, and Infect, those four decks, you do not want to see those cards.
Mm-hmm.
And those are four very real decks in a modern format, so.
I've had matches of fairies online where James and I have been, you know, playing against other people in dailies just kind of together, or against each other where you have, like, your Dark Blast in your opening hand against Affinity, and they can just never beat you. You have a one black mana source and a Dark Blast,
mm-hmm.
and you kill all their stuff. Yeah, eventually, they're gonna run out of stuff, and then you, get to stop dredging and actually cast other spells, but, I mean, that card just wholly shuts them down, and it does that against a lot of other decks, too. I love Dark Blast. Every time I've had one in my deck, I've always wanted more when I haven't drawn it. Its utility is endless.
So we had a reader write in and wanted us to talk about Reshape. For people who are listening, it's Blue Blue X. As an additional cost to play Reshape, sacrifice an artifact, then search through your library for an artifact card whose converted mana cost is X or less and put it into play. So it's a fixed Tinker, which itself is a fixed Transmute artifact. Reshape had seen a little bit of play because you would reshape a Conjurer's Bauble or a Pentad Prism for a Lotus Bloom and go off in eggs. So that would let you bring in Lotus Bloom and get a whole bunch of black lotuses every turn when you're comboing off. Reshape, aside from that, though, I think the classic role of Tinker and Extended before Mirrodin was you would use it to cheat in a big artifact. So you'd get Phyrexian Colossus normally. I mean, after Mirrodin, you'd get Possessed Portal or things like that, or Mindslaver. But Tinker... The Tinker effect has been more, I think, about cheating mana than on tutoring. Because I think that if you're just tutoring for an artifact, then you're fabricating instead, which can get you anything. And I have a real hard time wanting to pay over an artifact's casting cost and pay an artifact just to get it into play.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit before the cast started. And I have a hard... I had a hard time kind of envisioning a deck where you wanted to cast Reshape. So, I don't necessarily think it's bad, but I'm not sure what the end game is with it. So, it was insane in eggs, like, finding your Lotus
Bloom.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a Karrak Clan Ironworks deck to be had with Reshape.
Do you pay the casting cost or the casting cost minus the Sacrifice Artifact's casting cost?
You do not even take into consideration the casting cost of the Sacrifice Artifact. Yeah, so you have to pay the whole thing. Which is why it was great when you're grabbing Lotus Bloom, because it's zero.
I mean, I could see where you would want to play this card in Mono Blue Tron if there was an artifact that you were concerned that your opponent would counter if you cast, but if you were reshaping for it, and you thought that was going to be game. But my problem is, as I sit here and think about this, is like, I can't tell you what that artifact would be, because even if you're playing, so like, you know, you live in some world where you have 12 mana up and you can sack an artifact and you can Mindslaver them, it's like, that's good, but if you have 12 mana up, and you don't quite have, like, 13, you're not saving a whole lot on the...
Also, if you've gotten to 12 in a Tron deck, I think you're usually winning the game.
Well, talking about, like, so Fabricate costs you 3 to go search for and play, so, I mean, it does cost you 1 less than Fabricate or Treasure Maging. It doesn't affect the board like Treasure Mage does. The only way I can see playing this is if the card you were trying to get to cheat into play was something you were afraid about them countering that you didn't think they were going to counter a reshape for X plus 2. And I can't figure out what that would be that would make you want to play reshape in this format. I mean, when Lotus Bloom was a thing, certainly it was awesome. But right now, as I sit here, I can't figure out what we're searching for with it. That makes me excited to want to play it.
I mean, if it were possible to reshape away a Wellspring, draw a card, and then go get Sunring Titan, that would be amazing. You know, you get your one of bombs like Sunring Titan, Possessed Portal, Mindslaver. But as it is, you can treasure mage for those things, and then you don't have to also have a pre-existing artifact in place. So I'm keeping an eye on Reshape. It's one of those cards that will probably eventually be a combo piece again, because reshaping for Lotus Bloom is still legal, and that is quite a potent combo to get mana going. But and like I said, there's probably a Krark Clan Ironworks deck there to be had, because you can conceivably run up 10 mana with a reshape if you have Ironworks out. Next on the list, Tectonic Edge.
I think it's very good. There's definitely a cost to play it in Modern, just because many decks, you have lots of 2 and 3 color decks, and
mm-hmm.
even a lot of the 2 color decks have some very specific mana requirements to cast their colored spells. But there are a lot of utility lands that exist in this format. I think, in fact, pretty sure basically every deck plays some utility lands. So this can be manlands.
Whether it be Gavany Township or manlands.
Yeah, it can be manlands like Treetop Village, Celestial Colonnade.
Pendlehaven.
Desolate Lighthouse.
Desolate Lighthouse. Or, yeah, they can be the manlands, or they can be utility lands like Desolate mm-hmm. Lighthouse, Gavany Township. And keeping your opponent from using those is really good. And then you will have some games where you lead off on a couple Tectonic Edges early. Your opponent plays their 4th land, and you can double tech edge them back. Sometimes they get to be used as actual mana denial as opposed to just mm-hmm. removal of utility lands, and when that happens, it's really good. It's obviously a very fixed wasteland, but in a format that is several turns slower than a wasteland format. The fact that your wasteland is several turns slower.
There was the Tempo Twin deck a few Pro Tours or Grand Prix back that, with the idea that you ran 4 Tectonic Edge, and it's like, I will double edge you, on my turn I will Molten Rain you, and then I will just kill you with a Pestermite. I will just attack you for lethal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, like, the double Tectonic Edge with backup is still strong.
I don't necessarily like Tectonic Edge. I think that there's oftentimes it's just not fast enough. The ideal situation, or situation where that usually comes up is your opponent goes, Tron Piece card. And you're like, well, this tech edge doesn't do anything. Your opponent just goes like, land, and they don't play 3rd land, and you're stuck with tech edges. But it's the only game in town. I think you should be playing tech edge. I think tech edge is sufficiently better than Ghost Quarter, to where I think it's realistically the one that I would play more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
It is also important to remember the really sweet tech edge trick. You can, if you have 2 tech edges and your opponent has exactly 4 lands, you can activate Tech Edge and maintain priority and activate the other Tech Edge and take your opponent from 4 to 2 instead of from 4 to 3, which is very important.
And I think it was not contemplated when they designed that card either that you were able to do that.
Yes, and it still throws opponents on Magic Online in the real world for a loop when I do that trick. And they're like, wait, it doesn't work, and you go through Jensen, and yes, it does. But I don't think Tech Edge is necessarily the land that destroys lands that we need for the format. I'm still holding out hope for something better. I don't know what that would be. Maybe a wasteland that doesn't add mana, or something along those lines. I think that there still needs to be something, because sometimes mm-hmm. people do get out underneath you, combo decks and especially, and Tron decks. But Tech Edge is the best we have, and you have to play with the best thing you get. I mean, it's not...
Mm-hmm.
That is a very worthwhile effect that you need in games of Modern, and so you play the best one available, and Tech Edge is the best one available.
I mean, there's basically 3 choices that I can think of. You have Tectonic Edge, you have Ghost Quarter, and there's the M14, I believe.
Encroaching Wastes. Nobody plays.
Which, yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying Encroaching Wastes is any good. I'm just saying those are the 3 choices that you really have.
Yeah.
I don't think Encroaching Wastes is even in the conversation about that. And I think there are probably times, like with the Tron argument, where you could make an argument for Ghost Quarter. It's also noteworthy, Tectonic Edge requires a 2nd mana to invest into it to activate mm-hmm. it, whereas Ghost Quarter is just sacking it. For the most part, though, I think Tectonic Edge is the best of what you can mm-hmm. play, and I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah, I've always liked Ghost Quarter in Tron because Ink Moth Nexus is a singular problem for Tron to deal with. And Affinity will never hit 4 lands, especially when they know that you have mm-hmm. edges in your decks. Ghost Quarter finds basic lands. Let's talk about another card that does the same thing, Path to Exile. I was looking at some Blue-White-Red Geist decks recently, and it's interesting that they are cutting down their paths down to two main deck with a couple on the board.
That never made sense to me, since Path to Exile feels to me like your best removal spell in a Geist deck, because the whole point of Geist deck is to get stuff out of the way
for
your Geist of Sentret. Yeah. It's not quite as good as Lightning Bolt, because it doesn't quite have the utility that Lightning Bolt has, where you can't Path to Exile somebody's face. But it is basically one mana, deal with any creature my opponent has in play forever. I'm not going to have to worry about that creature anymore. It's also really good in a bunch of your combo matchups, like Twin, and now it's very good against the Ascendancy deck. It's hard for them to go off through Path to Exiles. So I can't really imagine a world where playing a blue-white-red deck I would want less than four. I know that that card has been two of and three of before in those decks, and I have never played less than four and have always been happy to see that basically when you draw it. So yeah, I'm very high on that card.
The weird thing to me about Path to Exile is the number of people who are afraid of the drawback. They're like, but I'm ramping my opponents. So let's be clear here. The average modern deck does not play a card with a casting cost above four. I'm not sure what you're afraid of ramping your opponent into. In Standard, there was a real fear. Your opponent went turn two Putrid Leech. Your only removal spell was a Path to Exile, and you had to be afraid of ramping them from Leech straight to Bloodbraid Elf, or from Bloodbraid Elf straight to Broodmaid Dragon, because they were right on the curve and that one extra mana changed. That's not really a fear in modern. You get your opponent's turn two Tarmogoyf. Their turn three best play is still Liliana. Mm-hmm. They're still playing the same card they were going to play. So I think that Path to Exile is hands down the best removal spell in modern. It's the only removal spell that deals with a Ascendancy combo while it's going off, a Splurgeon combo while it's going off, hits Wyrmcoil Engine without granting value, which is the thing in Tron decks, kills Tarmogoyf, which a lot of removal spells in the format don't. I think it's good. I think it's better than Abrupt Decay, because I think that you can kind of get people playing Abrupt Decay by playing things they have like four.
Well, you
and five.
Can tag lands with it too.
Yeah, it also kills Celestial Colonnade, which is a lot of magic in the game. Yeah.
I mean, I do not understand ever playing cards like Dismember over Path to Exiles, and I've seen junk decks doing that. And they're like, well, I'm playing these two Dismembers, and I'm just like, I don't understand. Path to Exile is just always going to do the same thing, and it kills six sixes. So I think Path is the best removal spell in the format, and like, if you are playing less than four of it, because you're playing a bunch of burn spells, I sort of understand, because burn spells doubles removing your opponent. But if you are not playing Path to Exiles so that you can fit in Dismembers, Murderous Cuts,
Slaughter Packs,
I just don't understand.
If I were playing Junk, my deck, my removal suite would basically start with four Path and three or four Abrupt Decay and like the one of Maelstrom Pulse that people like.
And that would be
where I would start. I don't understand playing less than four of that card in almost every situation.
So I'm going to end on one card here. James, you were saying before we started that Modern lacks hard counters, and there was one that immediately came to mind. It's seen play now and then. It has the text counter target spell. It costs blue. The card is Deprive. You has an additional cost to have to return a land to your hand. Now, Deprive, whenever I think about it, I think, oh my god, yeah, Deprive is in this format. Deprive is awesome. Why are we playing Deprive?
So, we have a good friend who, I think he finished 9th or 10th. It was at a Modern GP a couple of years ago, our friend Corey, and he was playing Blue-White-Red Geist Aggro, and this was at a time when that deck played Isochron Scepter and Steplinks. And Deprive was insane in that deck because it was returning lands to make landfall triggers for your Steplinks. So there was awesome synergy with that. I believe that when Deprive was Standard, it saw a fair bit of Standard play.
I believe it did.
At the time, too.
I remember even
I don't think it was ever a 4-of, but I'm pretty sure it saw saw some decent play. I think it's a fine card. I don't think it's insane. In an Esper control deck I've actually been working on lately, I've been playing Logic Knot.
Ah.
It is a Guillaume Wafatapa deck. And Logic Knot feels pretty close to Counterspell at many points in the game. So I don't think there's anything wrong with Deprive. I don't think it's a card you want to run more than, like, one or two of. But I think it's probably playable, especially that once you've made, you know, 3, 4, 5 land drops, mm-hmm. Picking one up is not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's the problem with Deprive. I think the problem with Deprive is it starts getting good about turn 4 and right. after.
You don't want to pick up a land.
You don't want to pick up a land before turn 4. I think the reason why Deprive hasn't seen more wide play is literally just that turn 2 to turn 3 window where people don't want to cast it and pick up their lands. But I think that Deprive is a good card to remember. Familiar's Reset is a good card to remember, which is floating around out there. It's Deprive, except for you think of a dude. I think that both of those are good cards for being on their logic dot. I think that Deprive is good. It's not the counterspell I want. The counterspell I want is something that looks like a reverse Abrupt Decay, where it only counters spells that cost 1, 2, and 3. Just because I think the format needs a bit of a hard counter. I think Mana Leap becomes weird late game. But I like Deprive. I think that it probably should see more play than it does, but it doesn't necessarily answer the question for the counterspell I'd like to see in the format, but it is a solid Magic card and is worth remembering.
I remember when I was playing several years ago, there was a Rug Delver deck that was floating around, and that deck used 4 Deprive and 4 Snapcaster Mage, and it would have games that would go turn 1 Bolt, turn 2 Deprive, turn 3 Tarmogoyf, turn 4 Spell Snare or whatever, Mana Leak, turn 5 Snapcast my Deprive. Like, the ability to Snapcast a Deprive late in the game is incredible. And that was a deck that functioned heartily off of 1 or 2 lands in play, and that it posed a big problem because you could burn a Deprive to counter a Path to Exile on your Tarmogoyf or your Delver, and you'd be totally happy about that.
We should also remember, too, playing a card like Deprive, you get to maybe play some other come-into-play lands that trigger abilities. So I know that in some of the two-color standard decks, like Radiant Fountain was popular, but then there's some other ones, like you have Halimar Depths.
Yes.
Which is, you know, it's not insane. But it's pretty cool with fetch lands, which mm-hmm. you did have when it was standard, but you still have now. So it's sort of like a free reorder your library, maybe shuffle a couple cards away that you don't want. Or if you're playing a deck where just playing lands because they trigger stuff like Landfall mm-hmm. makes sense, that's a card you could definitely look at. And even if you have no synergies, the fact that it's a 2-mana hard counter with no real drawback once you get to turn, you know, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
It's definitely a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a deck right now where I'd want to play Deprive in, but it's certainly a powerful enough card mm-hmm. to see play in Modern, and it does kick off your counter wars about where you want to be.
And again, like in a Delver deck like that, where you're functioning on 2 or 3 mana, even picking up a land on turn 2 is not all that big a deal, especially if you're countering something that you really need to get rid of. And also keep in mind that I don't think we're ever playing Deprive as the only counterspell in a deck. It's going to be supplemented by cards like Spell Snare and Mana Leak or Remand and other very efficient counterspells, so that when you're on turn 2 and you're looking at a Mana Leak and a Deprive and your opponent casts a spell that you want to counter, you know, you don't have to make a decision. You know, there's no drawback. You just cast your Mana Leak, and then you cast your Deprive a turn or two later. So
Deprive is certainly not a card I had been considering, but I think it's a fine Magic card in this format.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have done it again. You've spent another hour with us here on the Modern Enthusiast. We have talked about a long list of cards. If you want to talk to us about those cards, you know how to reach us. Just come to the head of this program, and you'll find our contact information. We also talked about what we think makes the ideal Modern game. If you have a differing opinion or you have something more to add, please get a hold of us. Also, we'd be glad to share your opinions on the air. Until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
And I'm James.
And this has been The Modern Enthusiast.